Hey, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Roost Podcast. As always, I am Carter Spires, here with my co-host Matthew Bartlett, the founder and managing editor of The Roost, your premier source for Rice Sports news and analysis. We're back. It's the first show of 2020. We're excited to be back talking to y'all again. We'll hit some notes about the spring sports in progress or about to get started in the case of baseball. We'll have a little bit more about basketball in particular coming up for y'all a little later, but we'll touch on that just a little bit, and then we'll get to the bulk of this show, which will cover the late signing period. I guess it is still technically National Signing Day, although the early signing period is really the actual signing day now.
Whatever you want to call tacking a couple more recruits onto the end.
Yeah, which is pretty much what everyone does in February at this point, unless you've just switched your coaching staff. But yeah, we'll go over the couple of new signees that Rice had and some thoughts about the signing class as a whole, and then move into just a little short preview of spring ball before we get started. Believe at the end of February is when they're going to get that rolling. So, yeah.
Yeah, it feels like everything has happened and nothing's been happening at the same time. It's that weird lull in between as everyone's kind of recovering for the stretch run in basketball and all that. And actually, side note, I was talking with the coaching staff at the end of the signing period, and they said that they're hearing from some folks working at some NCAA meetings and such that there could be a third signing period added for football in the not so distant future. That's currently in the workshops and still being talked about, but you know, why not make it even more confusing? So we'll see. We'll have national signing brunches.
Not the early signing, the middle early signing, and the late signing. That's how we divide these up. That makes sense, right?
All of the above. These are your Rice people. You can do the math. We'll figure it out. Yeah, so we'll deal with that when we get to it. For now, we just have the two. So first off, capping off the end of last year, for everybody who went ahead and filled out our postseason survey, I want to say thank you. A lot of good notes and things to help us make the podcast better, make the content on the site better, and get ready for, you know, the upcoming calendar year and football season. I will have you know I've already started piecing together some off-season notes, and there will be plenty of interesting things to talk about. We'll save for a rainy day and maybe push out a podcast or two in between. So we will get to plenty of football. As Carter alluded to, we have baseball season starting up on Valentine's Day. So get to the ballpark with your significant other. There may or may not be doing some sort of intra-inning raffles where they're giving away gift cards and date night things. I don't know if that's officially happening. I know they were talking about it. So if not, you can see Rice take on Texas, which is cool. Regardless of what sport it is or when it's happening, that's going to be pretty fun to watch. Rice should have a pretty good team. Hopefully the plan is take a couple steps from where they were last year, depending on pitching, but it should be a good weekend. So get out to that. And then a couple other notes, the women's basketball team, at time of recording, has a 30-game conference winning streak. They haven't lost since the 2018 Conference USA tournament. So that's spanning, what year are we in now? 2020? 30?
Yeah, it's been a while.
It's February, but yeah, so 3 years they haven't since, you know, using some loosey-goosey math, they haven't lost a conference game, which is just unheard of. That's, you know, Alabama football level dynasty.
Yeah, I mean, and a significant stretch of that, you know, at the beginning of conference play in this one was without.
So they lost.
Can't actually remember if Erica Ogwumike was the CUSA Player of the Year, but if she wasn't, she should have been.
She was preseason Player of the Year, and then she was just named National Player of the Week by College Baseball Writers Association. In addition to her third Conference USA Player of the Week honor, which they've been playing for 8 weeks, so I don't know how she doesn't have eight. So yeah, she missed a couple games. Nancy Mulkey has missed a couple games. And in those games that Rice's stars were out, they still won by double digits.
And they, you know, it's good to see them. You know, you can maybe say some of this is that they were probably facing on average tougher competition in non-conference play. You know, they had a couple power conference teams that they had in there that they couldn't quite get victories against, like the heartbreaker against Texas A&M. But, you know, they certainly played some teams in non-conference play that were not really at the level of the CUSA competition and did not look as good at times then. So it's been really good to see them kind of rounding into form as it has become most important. And, you know, they've still got a couple of critical matchups against ODU, who's the second place team right now in the conference left before the end of regular season play. But it's been really good to see them rounding into form and continuing their dominant streak against against
you always opponents. And you always hear that coach speak of, right, like, well, you know, we're just taking it one day at a time and we're getting better. And that's kind of, you know, what the song and dance was at the beginning of the year of the, we're growing into who we are, even though we brought back a lot of the same players. And just looking at this team, they look so much more in sync, especially on the defensive end of the court, which is kind of their bread and butter. Like, I wish there was a mulligan and they could go back and play those games, or maybe if Conference USA didn't backload all of their conference games and we could squeeze in a weekend where they could be, you know, I want to see what happens if you play Texas A&M in March, which, you know, if hopefully they'll have a chance, but we'll see. So lots of good news on that front. And then if we want to switch back to football, one note, Rice has a XFL professional football player. Austin Walter made his debut with the Dallas Renegades and had a couple carries, kick return, kind of got into the tail end of that game. And, you know, they played, what, 3.5 quarters and didn't score a touchdown. And they didn't let Austin touch the ball very much. And, you know, he led the nation in all-purpose yards for the first, like, what, two-thirds of his senior season. So they should think about getting him the football. That's my two cents.
Sadly, not on the squad of our hometown Houston Roughnecks, of whom we have always been fans, but
diehard from the beginning of time, supporting of the Roughnecks.
Yeah, you know, I'm not the sort of person who goes about, you know, supporting Dallas sports cavalierly, but you know, with that squad, with Austin on that squad, and they have, do you know who their offensive coordinator is?
Of the Roughnecks?
Yeah, or the Renegades.
The Renegades. Dallas. Well, the head coach is Bob Stoops, is that right?
It is, yes.
Who's the offensive coordinator?
Hal Mumme.
Hey, that's right.
The originator the air raid. Of, yep, yeah. Exactly. Yeah, him and Mike Leach back at, I believe they were at Iowa Wesleyan
before they moved to Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
Man.
And yeah. They, so that's
just
a blast.
Didn't know that you were getting an air raid and XFL trivia segment on the podcast today.
Yeah, between them at in Dallas, and then of course Houston's head coach is June Jones, who famously ran the run and shoot for many years at Hawaii. We've got some old school college offense flavor in these Texas XFL teams.
Hey, and isn't Aaron Murray is a quarterback somewhere, right? What team?
He's on Tampa, one of the teams. In Tampa, yeah, for his hometown Tampa Bay Vipers.
There you go. I'll say the bright green, lime green on a football uniform, not a primary color.
I didn't watch a lot of the games,
but I winced.
Some of those uniforms are pretty nice. I really liked the New York ones, the Guardians. That black and red scheme was pretty cool, but not so much with Tampa Bay. You said it. That lime green is just needs to be an accent color. We don't need that as a you know. Yeah, it's a little much.
as a Houstonian, we're partial to the navy and the blue and the more calm, not in your face. I guess we got red. That's pretty bold with the Rockets. There you go. And blue with the Owls, of course. We'll mix it up a little bit. They got a classic look, and I guess instead of going away on XFL, we'll move back over to Rice. Two notes, couple coaching changes on the Rice staff. The moves at offensive line and tight end. So Coach Joe Ashfield and Bill Best aren't with the program right now. Rice has not made an announcement as to who those replacements will be. Like you said, Carter Springball starts up in a couple of weeks. So I'm assuming those announcements will be forthcoming soon, which I guess puts them at a week or two, but I guess it figures out who they want to hire and when they want to make that official. But, you know, they don't make me privy to when they announce such things. So I have no doubt they got a couple good ones lined up, and we will have names hopefully soon. And then more importantly, we'll have football, and they'll have some of the class of what Flight School 20 will be early enrolling and be ready for spring ball. But we're not going to start there. We're going to go ahead and kick in with, There you go. That's a transition to the kicker and the rest of the class that Rice signed at the late national signing day.
Yeah, so so just four additional pickups in terms of scholarship players for Rice on this in this national signing day slash late signing day, whatever you want to call it, which is pretty typical. As I think I've mentioned on here before, you know, it's really gotten to be in the last this year that, you know, it's been what, this is the third year of the early signing period in December happening, and especially over the last two, it's really gotten to the point where I think upwards of 85% at least of FBS players end up signing in that early signing period. So it's pretty normal for only kind of the back end of your class to get signed, you know, whether you had some guys that, you know, were committed and didn't weren't sure about qualifying yet or admittance or that sort of thing. Or whether you, you know, you hit your major needs and now you're just, you know, you're looking at the guys that are left. So those four guys for Rice, one of them, another grad transfer from Stanford, still working on that pipeline, is kicker Colin. Do we know if it's Riccitelli or Riccitelli?
I believe it's Riccitelli.
Okay, gotcha. So, yeah, it's especially good to get a kicker given that, you know, losing almost the whole battery of specialists from last year and then having Zach Hoban entering the transfer portal over the last month or so. So good to get a kicker in the fold.
Yeah. And the staff actually said that before Zach announced his decision to transfer, that they were already, I guess Colin entered the portal midway through last season, October-ish. And so as soon as he hit the portal, the Rice coaches were doing their due diligence and looking in on there. And the analogy that was brought up, which we're coming off LSU's national championship run, which was historic, and I'm sure all of the Rice coaches are excited to play LSU next season. the comparison that was brought up was, well, you know, Joe Burrow was a pretty good quarterback, and he sat behind people at Ohio State and had to transfer until he got his shot. And it wasn't that he wasn't a good quarterback at Ohio State. It's that somebody else, you know, Dwayne Haskins. Dwayne Haskins, other future NFLer. Somebody else was NFL caliber guy in front of him. And, you know, if you know anything about Stanford's current kicker, Jet Toner, he is the all-time leader in points scored.
Fantastically named Jet Toner.
The all-time special teams name and the leading scorer in Stanford football history and a two-time all-Pac-12 selection. And I don't know if you know this, but you can play one kicker at a time. Rice has proven you can play two punters.
Weird. But only interesting.
Well, I guess I take that back. Didn't Rice try out two kickers 2 years ago with Hayden taking the slow ones? And I lied. Mm-hmm. You can't play two kickers. Oh, man. We might have just debunked the entire premise. So maybe Colin Riccitelli is not Joe Burrow. But the staff really likes him. Obviously, Bloomgren was a part of recruiting him when he was at Stanford. And they think they're pretty optimistic they should be able to get a medical redshirt for an earlier season of his and have a kicker for 2 years that is a veteran who's been there before, and they don't have to throw out a freshman against LSU or Houston or whoever and say, here, go make this field goal or we lose. That's what they would like to avoid.
Yeah, and it's just always good to, you know, even if they hadn't lost hope, and it's just always good to have, you know, a couple of guys that you feel like you can depend on at the kicker position, because you never know. It's such a mental thing that, you know, sometimes guys can just, you know, get the yips, if you will. And then, or, you know, there's always the possibility that, you know, your kicker gets hurt. Like, say, if you're Alabama and your kicker kicks the tee and tears his hip flexor in the middle of the season, because that's a thing that happened. So
this is a real thing?
It's a real thing. Yeah. Oh, they had people were like, oh, Alabama kickers are so bad. We had a good one last season. Hold true out. Freshman.
I'm,
like,
I'm breaking out my world's smallest fiddle.
He tore his hip flexor kicking the tee on a kickoff against, like, I think it was Southern Miss.
CUSA is proud.
They.
but to your point, I mean, last season, it was Chris Barnes is the guy who ended up being the field goal kicker for, I guess, what, 2/3 of the season? And you're talking about a guy who walked onto the team as a, eventually ended up as a tight end, I think, and then figured out he could punt, and like that was never in the cards, and he became, you know, a pretty good specialist. And I was joking with the staff the other day, their net punting statistics actually improved from Jack Fox's senior year to Chris Barnes last year of punting, and they've told me they've let Jack know that. That's not to say that Chris Barnes was better than Jack Fox, but he was pretty good. So occasionally you'll have a Chris Barnes waiting in the wings, but you'd rather have more. So Rice won't have more this year. It will literally just be Colin Riccatelli. And I don't know who the backup would be. I guess Charlie Mendez, the punter, would get a shot, but I have no idea. Actually, if somebody had to kick tomorrow, Antonio Montero would legitimately probably be your field goal kicker, and they would go for it if the kick was longer than like 35 yards.
Yeah. Well, Riccatelli's not going to be here in the spring, is he?
No, I don't believe so.
So yeah, I guess we'll figure out who the backup kicker is in the spring.
We will have hard hitting backup kicker, starting kicker practice notes from spring ball. Oh yeah. Man.
So
that's one of the guys.
Yeah. There's another transfer-ish in linebacker Jaron Banks, I believe out of California, who also has 2 years of eligibility, I think. So always good to get those guys who are coming in experienced and have, you know, an addition, get them for more than 1 year, because, it, you know, especially with the depth Rice has at linebacker, as much as they like to rotate guys, you know, you always want another guy, but it'll be good to get him, have him on campus for more than one season.
Yeah, so no, I believe what New Mexico Military Institute is the junior college he was at, but he's from Oregon. So you successfully like
hit the middle. I averaged it out. I'm just averaging out
works,
the
right? It's math. So yeah, the staff is really excited about adding him. The guy that all of the coaching staff and then some others comp this guy to is Antonio Montero. Which is pretty good, arguably.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think Antonio got any CUSA honors, but, you know, he's the backup kicker. And is really one of those guys that probably relentlessly pursues to the point where he impacts every play, even if he doesn't get the tackle. And the staff has been really impressed with him. And that's who Jaron Banks has just been compared to him over and over again. He'll have 2 years left of eligibility kind of coming in. And the rate that with which Rice has hit on their JUCO transfers is unsustainable, but that doesn't mean that they can't keep it going for a little bit longer. So they're kind of molding him after the Blaze Aldridge of he was productive at the junior college level, and Jaron actually probably was equally or maybe a little bit more productive than Blaze was. Doesn't have the size and the athleticism maybe that he does, so we're not going to set him up for that, but they like what he's seen, what they've seen from him a little bit. And, you know, he's the kind of guy that, like you said, being able to sub out and keep your guys fresh. If you can clone Antonio Montero and add him and Jaron Banks and Blaze Aldridge, and you have Garrett Grammer, you have a really, really, really good linebacker core.
Yeah. Well, and it's just one of those things where it really just lets you even be more versatile. We've talked plenty about how Brian Smith likes to move these guys around. And, you know, I think that we highlighted plenty of times last season when, you know, you look up from play to play and all of a sudden Blaze Aldridge is playing defensive end, or Anthony Ekpe was lined up in the slot or something like that. Like they got really creative with the personnel on defense. And, you know, having more bodies and guys who can capably play different positions is really essential for that, because, you know, if you don't have other guys who can capably play linebacker, you know, you can't line up Blaze at defensive end and have him rush the passer. So the more guys you capably trust to play a particular position, the more creative you can get with the guys who kind of have a little versatility. So it's always just, you know, the more guys you have, you trust to come in and do a different position, really gives you a lot to work with. And that moves us to our two high school signees for this late signing period, both of whom are defensive backs. One of them is Lamont Narcisse. I hope I'm saying that right. Who is also from the West Coast. A lot of West Coast guys out of this late signing group. And one of, I believe, the 10 highest rated signees in Rice history. So yeah, pretty good to get a guy of that talent level.
Go pull up that list and we'll get to that too. But Lamont, rating is and stars and all that kind of stuff is in part at least built around who else wanted you. And I think it's notable that the last 2 weeks of the signing cycle, Lamont took a visit to Washington State and he took a visit to Rice and had both of those fresh in his mind and ended up picking the Owls. So anytime you can get a head-to-head win where a guy looks at a Power 5 program and then looks at you and picks you, that's a good thing and a really good get for Rice. And Lamont would have been the highest rated signee in this class had Rice not gone and added a even higher rated defensive back on that same day. But that's a good problem to have, right? And the thing with Lamont is we talk about speed and athleticism. This is a guy who runs the 100-yard dash in under 11 seconds. And that's really fast. I know it's been a while since the Summer Olympics have been on, since we've watched the 100-yard dash. But he can go. And having someone that you can put on the outside and that can literally keep track with everyone, that's what Brian Smith needs for this defense.
Yeah, exactly. And I mentioned, you know, some of those of you who follow me on Twitter may have seen this comment from me, but like, I really like that this staff is prioritizing getting really, really high quality athletes at defensive back, because especially with this scheme, like, you can coach guys up and you can take, you know, a flyer on a guy who needs development, whether as a player or whether he needs to work on his body a little bit or stuff like that at other positions, you know, like playing linebacker, speed matters less than knowing what you're doing and reacting quickly, because, you know, the running back can be faster than you, but if you know where he's going and you react a half a second earlier, that can mean the difference between, you know, a 1 yard loss and a guy breaking a big gain. You know, if you're a quarterback, you know, as long as you have enough arm to make the throws, you can really compensate for being, you know, smaller or less athletic, things like that, by having a really advanced understanding of what you're doing at the position. That can apply to things like offensive line as well, which is like a very developmental position. At the secondary, and especially in a scheme like Rice's, where you're going to ask the corners in particular to just straight up play a lot of man coverage, a lot of press coverage, sometimes you just got to have dudes who can run really fast. Like, you can know exactly what you're supposed to be doing in press coverage, but if you're real slow, a lot of wide receivers are just going to run right by you. And so I think that's an area where, you know, we'll talk in a little bit about how, you know, when do stars matter and how much they matter for players versus classes or individual classes versus over a long term and stuff like that. But I think pursuing higher rated players, and in the case we've seen with these couple guys that they've gotten, actually hitting on those in the recruiting process is really important and a really needs to be and clearly has been a focus for this staff, because that's a position where there is only so much you can compromise on just needing athletes, guys who can run fast and jump high at that position. So I was really pleased to see that, you know, if there was any position where you're going to say, okay, in this class, Rice is going to sign two guys in the same part of the field that are among the highest rated recruits in Rice history, defensive back is where you want those guys to be.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's whenever we talk about that speed component, what I think of watching 2 years ago is perfect example when Rice played Houston at Rice Stadium. They were going trading blows and actually had a lead on Houston in the fourth quarter. And then De'Aaron King just threw, I think, 3 70-yard touchdown passes to guys like Marquez Stevenson and people that just out-athleted the Rice defensive backs. And it didn't matter who was back there. They were just superior athletes. And it's probably an interesting, I don't know how much Lamont or especially these younger guys are going to play the first game of the season against Houston. Luckily, aside, De'Aaron King is not there anymore. That's great. Clayton Toon, not De'Aaron King. But we have, 7 months, 8 months before we have to preview that game, however the math works out. But I think that's a notable difference, that coming in when Blomgren got here, seeing what was there at secondary, and they didn't have the athleticism and they didn't have the speed. And you can miss on guys that have athleticism and the speed, because say one of these guys gets to campus and we're like, you can't cover anyone worth a darn. Put them on special teams, put them at kick returner. Like you can find a place to put a good athlete on a football team. And so this is an area that the coaching staff knew they needed to fix. And they've gone in and brought in guys. I mean, just in this signing class, Sean Fresh and Andrew Mason. Last signing class, you got Zay Knipe, Jake Bailey, just guys who can run. And that was a big hole that has been answered. Now, getting them onto the field, which is something we didn't see a lot of last year, and healthy is a whole nother ball game. But you have to have the bullets in the chamber before you can fire the gun, right?
Yep. Very, very Texas metaphor. Yeah, I think Treshawn DeVones.
You should have said that with a twang.
I think Treshawn DeVones is another one of those guys that I think if you go back and look at that that list of the highest rated recruits per the 247 composite, I think he is also on that list. And, you know, he's a guy that they were high on coming into the season, and, you know, it took him a little while to get there, but was starting and really playing well by the end of the season. So, it speaks to what they're doing in terms of identifying talent and getting guys in at that position.
Yeah, DeVones ended up being the number 21 signee in Rice history, which is pretty good. Yeah, also looking at guys from this current class, we mentioned Gabe Taylor. He was and is the highest rated recruit that Rice has ever signed. Jake Bailey is number 6. Lamont Narcisse, when he signed on signing day, was the number 7 recruit. He is since his ranking was. He signed with Rice and his ranking got torpedoed, and I think he's now down in the 20s or something like that. And then Sean Fresh is number 12 all time. And then I think, and I mentioned Jake Bailey. So you're talking about, what is that, 5 of the top 25 or so players that Rice has ever signed are on campus right now, and 4 or 5 of the top, or what, 4 of the top 12? That's better.
Speaking of Gabe Taylor, like we said, the highest rated recruit in Rice history, and really a guy that probably could have been higher rated if not for probably two things. One is just that he's small. He's like, I think he's listed at 5'10", 180 or something like that, which is not, you know, that is plenty of DBs play at that size in Division I, but it's it's on the smaller side. Like, you're probably not going to be a five star at that size. But the other thing being that he didn't play football until his senior year. And the reason for that is because he mostly focused on basketball because he wanted to make his own name for himself, because he is the younger brother, the much younger brother of the late Sean Taylor. Yes, that is Sean Taylor, former All-American at the All-American and national champion at the University of Miami, and All-Pro safety for Washington in the NFL. So yeah, if you go look that up,
it's a good bloodline.
Yeah, he's about 18 years younger than his brother, and a little shorter than Sean was. But in what, his 1 year of high school football, he had how many pick sixes?
Five. Not interceptions, pick sixes. Rice had six interceptions last year, and they picked UTSA off on the 1 yard line and didn't score. Like, Gabe's pick sixes were literally, if you go pull up, go to the recruiting page on the Roost website, scroll down, and I have a huddle video on his profile wrote up. I started watching it, and you see a pick six, and you're like, okay, all these, like, everyone, if you're a defender, you put every touchdown you've ever scored on your highlight film, just because you do. But it like, the ball could have just fallen in your lap and you ran. It might show nothing about your athletic ability. So I see a pick six, I'm like, fine, whatever. And then I see another one, I'm like, okay. And then I see another one. He puts all of them on his highlight reel. I'm like, okay, once you get
that's
past
a long highlight reel.
Once you get past four pick sixes, I'm now interested that this was not just a happenstance. Like, you're good at this.
Yeah, it does. It annoys me with this is a total aside, but when they get the defensive players on there, and it's like they just want to put the sacks on there or something like that, for especially for the defensive ends. And so it's all these plays where, like, they just left the guy unblocked because they were running zone read or something like that, and he runs in and, like, tackles the quarterback immediately on the keeper. And it's like, okay, you're fast. Like, you didn't, like,
I
don't know,
someone smaller than you, like, good, that's your job.
Yeah, it's like, you don't you know, put, if you have any highlights of yourself, like, splitting a double team and, you know, making a big tackle, or, like, you know, show me something that says, like, I'm way better than the guys I'm playing against. Not like, yeah, they decided not to block me and that was a bad decision.
Which, you know, tackling open in the open field, that's a skill you need too.
Solid fundamentals.
But that's not what you put on highlight films. But anyhow, yeah, Gabe Taylor's highlight film, fantastic. And this is, I mean, you mentioned he's 5'10", which is, yeah, it's shorter. And he's been brought in as a defensive back. I think ideally they would be happy if he wound up finding a fit at corner. But I think safety is probably where he's going to start out. Just with that size and his highlight film, he played safety primarily in high school. So that's probably the first dose we'll get of Gabe. And I think, frankly, like, it's kind of amazing that he signed with Rice. And I think the fact that he didn't play football till his senior year was probably the biggest blessing for this staff, because as soon as I caught wind that, you know, he was in the discussion, Rice was looking at signing him and had begun recruiting him, I guess, what, late January. I looked him up and I said, what, you're telling me that Sean Taylor's little brother is really good at football and no one's recruited him until January and he's going to sign with Rice? I, like, Miami's is literally down the street. Like, he played at Gulliver Prep in Florida. And there was a lot of Miami folks actually that were pretty upset that he's not going to Miami, a scholarship or a walk-on or something. They're like, how could you let Sean Taylor's brother, who's actually good at football, leave the state of Florida? So Rice signing him, it's a pretty impressive haul that could look even better than, you know, what his 9-10 games of highlight tape.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely think this is a kid who, if he had played, you know, even 2 years, like, I mean, this was his first year of high school football and he put up tape like that. And, you know, if he does that his junior year, like, he's getting offers. Like, this kid is probably, like, there's a good chance this guy is a four-star and is, you know, right now signed and possibly enrolled at a Power 5 program if he had played one more year of high school football. But
Miami could use a defensive back like him.
Yeah.
Legitimately. Florida State, you might be able to argue, could use him. Florida's pretty set, but yeah, like another good fortune. And the same kind of thing happened for Rice, the Cedar Hill kids they signed. I guess it would have been the 2019 class. They both weren't starters until their senior seasons, kind of sat behind guys who had Power 5 offers. And then lo and behold, by the time it got to be their turn, you only had 1 year of highlight tape on them. And at that point, you know, especially these Power 5 schools that start their recruiting processes back when these guys are sophomores, they weren't playing as sophomores or juniors. So they just flat out missed them. And by the time it got to the point where, you know, Gabe Taylor's making waves and turning heads, they had already filled up and they said, oh, we don't need any more corners. And that was that. So it's fortunate for Rice. They'll take it. But yeah, there was Josh Landrum was one of the guys, and Kirk Lockhart was the other one. They both played a good amount of special teams this year, and probably a little bit more of the field as sophomores. But guys that, again, very talented, but if you don't have a lot of highlight tape, sometimes you get missed. And I think Gabe Taylor might be one guy that some of the Power 5 programs in Florida might end up saying, oops, we missed.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think this is going to be a guy in a couple of years that even on a, certainly on a conference level, and maybe even, you know, in some games Rice has against Power 5 competitions, you're going to have some people from other fan bases watching him, and they're going to be saying, like, how in the world did this guy sign with Rice? Because he's just got that level of talent.
He's a top 100 player in the state of Florida. Like, that's a football state.
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing. And this is not, you know, like a classic example to bring back the example that I always from the example pool that I always use. But like Josh Jacobs, who, you know, should have been NFL rookie, offensive rookie of the year this year for the Raiders, was a total late find because he played for a small school in Oklahoma, like Tulsa, I think, and was a like, just kind of nobody really knew about him until like right before signing day. I think he signed in the last year before the early signing period. And then like a week before signing day, like Alabama and Oklahoma and all these schools caught on to him like at the very last second. And he ended up signing with Alabama and obviously went on to a great career. But, you know, this is not that situation where, you know, Oklahoma is not a talent rich state. And I think Tulsa is not necessarily one of the more talent rich, or wherever he was from. I think it's Tulsa, but I'm not entirely sure. It's not one of the more talent rich areas. This is Florida, and Gabe Taylor was at Gulliver Prep, where his brother went. Like, this is not an area where you should be missing prospects, and yet, their loss is Rice's gain.
It's wild because one of the reasons that Gabe did fly so far under the radar, he was so committed to basketball that in the spring and when other players were taking official visits and in the fall and going to, you know, see out of state programs or what have you, he was playing basketball and he was really committed to being the best basketball player he could. So he didn't even try and put himself out there. It wasn't that he was under recruited and trying. He'd not made the switch yet to say, I'm going to be a football player. And then he did. And it literally the weekend before National Signing Day, he's playing a basketball game. And by the way, he registered a quadruple double in that game. He's a point guard.
At 5'10",
quadruple double, like freak athlete, registers a quadruple double at this game. And it's one of those situations where, you know, sitting in the bleachers is, I think, two or three Rice coaches are there and they're bumping elbows with Vanderbilt was there. And I'm trying to remember who else. There's several other schools taking their last looks of this basketball game. I'm just kind of picturing is you have all the fans and you have a growing assortment of coaches that are here to watch the point guard hopefully play for their football team. And so it was one of those things that I think if you had another signing period and you take in even more players off the table and people are going to bat for one last kid in their signing class and the signing period was in March, I don't think Gabe Taylor ends up at Rice. I think somebody else would have snatched him.
Here's once they add the that fourth storm. Period, the late signing period,
the transfer portal is officially created an extra bonus period because
that's true.
I mean, you don't really have to have somebody on campus until June when you start your summer workouts, and the transfer players, the graduate transfers are signing grant and aid paperwork. They're not actually signing national letter of intent. So a grant and aid is just, I'm agreeing that you will pay me money to go to school when I get here. And if a player who signs a grant and aid form decides, yeah, I know I committed to so-and-so, but I would change my mind, I'd like to go somewhere else. Like theoretically, any grad transfer that signed their papers in December or February can decide in April they want to go somewhere else. And there's literally nothing the university can do about it.
Yeah. Well, and you know, no prospect is actually required to sign a letter of intent. So you occasionally get guys who don't sign at all and then just end up enrolling at their school of choice, if you do sign a letter of intent, you can only sign one. So like the example this year is Zach Evans, the 5-star running back from North Shore right here in Houston, has had a very eventful recruitment, and that is an extreme understatement, but signed with Georgia secretly back in the early signing period, and then was going to announce it at the Under Armour game and didn't, and eventually asked for his release from his letter of intent with Georgia, and you can't sign another one, so wherever he ends up going, he's just going to show up there one day. When something like that happens, like where you have a guy, you know, say you have a guy signed in the early period and then the coach gets fired late and he asks for and gets a release from his letter, you can't sign a second one. So at that point, your services are up for grabs until the day you are actually enrolled.
I'm just picturing Zach Evans just walking up to the coast in Mississippi and getting on a shrimp boat with Lane Kiffin and saying, hey, I think I'll come hang out at Ole Miss for a couple years.
Like that's how the story ends, right? I would not be surprised at all if that's how it ends.
But anyhow, and on that note, we've kind of wrapped through the signees that Rice added during the late whatever national signing period. There are probably, it's hard to tell with the math on the roster. This is going to be a smaller class for Rice. I think you're probably most likely looking at one more spot, maybe two, probably one. And so they're still kind of out there, and you will see another transfer who, you know, February is just a day, then they don't have to make a decision by then. So they're going to keep recruiting these guys, and you'll probably see, I would imagine, one more that gets added on between February and June, which doesn't really narrow it down. Mm-hmm. I think Rice likes where they're at. I know Rice likes where they're at on the defensive signees, and I don't think there's too many of the instant impact guys sitting out there that they really want to plug in. I feel like they feel much better, especially in the secondary now after getting those guys. We're looking at Michael Williams, Stanford transfer, on the defensive line. That one came down to SMU and Vanderbilt, and he ended up going to SMU. So that didn't work out, but I think the main point they're going to look at is the offense. So running back is a spot where you feel really good about Juma Ottaviano and Juwan King, what he showed last year. Juma hasn't been able to stay healthy, and you would love for him to be healthy the whole year, but on the off chance he isn't, you need to have an answer. And Rice lost a lot of rushing production last year with the departure of Charlie Booker and Aston Walter and Nashawn Ellerby. So I think you could see a grad transfer there, providing it's the right one. And then at wide receiver, you have Brad Rosner, who's a taller guy, but not really a bigger guy. And then you have a couple of guys that you probably feel pretty comfortable putting in the slot, but you don't really have another guy that you feel awesome about lining up every play opposite Brad on the other side. So I think those would be the two guys. You already have your quarterbacks that you brought in. So I'd be paying attention if Rice adds one more piece. I do expect them to. It'll probably be a wide receiver running back. So that'd be the places that I'd be looking to hear at least one more name announced by before we're done, which, like I said, could be in June.
And with that class wrapped up, like we have mentioned several times, it is per the 247 Sports Composite, the highest rated class in program history. Some thoughts about what that means. You can have a million discussions on the internet about how important recruiting rankings are and what they actually mean. The big thing is they matter in the aggregate. A single player's star rating does not, it's gives you maybe a likelihood, but it doesn't tell you a 5-star is not necessarily going to be a great player. A 2-star is not necessarily going to be a bad player. I mean, there are thousands and thousands of high school football players in the country, and only 350 of them or so can be blue chip recruits, 4 and 5 stars. So tons and tons of great players will come from the ranks of the 2s and 3 stars. So it doesn't mean that much at an individual player level. And then even at the sample size of, a whole class, there's only so much difference between, if you're looking at the top class versus another top 5 class or, classes that are within a few spots of each other. It doesn't say a whole lot. So this is not this is definitively the best group of football players that has ever matriculated into Rice University. It's evidence that recruiting as done by this staff, the approach that they're taking, is working. I think that's really the takeaway here, is that, you're not going to say this is the best class, this is the best group of football players in Rice history, and they're definitively going to be the best ever. But if they keep up getting classes like this, that are continue to be ranked about this size, and the size of at about this level, and the size of the class does have some influence on what the rankings end up being. So, you don't necessarily, that can be a factor too. And so it doesn't say a whole lot about the individual players at times, but if you continue to bring in classes at this level, then that in the aggregate means you have really raised the talent level of the program, which is what the coaching staff is trying to do. So that's the big takeaway for me from this.
Right. And you mentioned the size, and that's an important note. So Rice, when Blomgren was hired, the first week of December, and then told a week later, here, signed football players, his first class ended up being, I think, 12th, ranked 12th in Conference USA. The next class was 11th. So technically better, but within probably some rounding error. And then this class ended up being ranked 9th. So incremental improvement going through all that. But on the 9th side, a note on being 9th. So Rice signed, I'm looking through here, one of the smallest classes in Conference USA. And the way the ranking systems work is they are additive. So if you add another 3-star player, it adds points to your rating. So if you sign 19 players, for instance, and the number 6 class right above you signed 26 players, then this player, even if the 26 players are worse rated than your players, they're probably going to end up being above you. So the number 6 class is Western Kentucky. Actually, if you go look at just say, okay, give me what's the average rating of your players? Rice's average rating is actually better than Western Kentucky's. And they don't take grad transfers into that math. And so Javon Wilford and Michael Collins, the grad transfers that Rice took in this class, and Colin Riccatelli, if Rice had signed the high school equivalent of those players, then you're looking at a class that is probably ranked in the top, 6, 5, 4, because of how the transfer math works. So realistically, you're talking about a class that is ranked roughly in the middle of Conference USA from classes that were ranked at the bottom of Conference USA. And in general, as an Alabama fan, you can appreciate this, Carter, that talent wins. And if you have more talent on your roster than the other teams, your margin of error suddenly increases. And those games that Rice had last year where it came down to one fumbled snap or one bad decision at the goal line against Louisiana Tech, those one play game-changing moments suddenly end up becoming more and more, you have more and more opportunity to recover when you have better players on the field. So that's what I think the takeaway from this is you can debate whether or not like this is the most talented group of players. And I don't know if it necessarily is. I actually had some funny interaction on Twitter with Christian Covington. I posted the rankings of here's Rice's all-time class ratings of Rice's classes all time. And, you know, you see the bar graph and aha, this is the highest rated class. And of course, the lowest rating class that Rice has ever signed was in 2011. And that was Christian Covington's class. And so again, Christian Covington ended up being a pretty good football player. So in a single one-for-one shot, the ranking is not the end-all be-all. But I think gross total, add them all up together, what you're seeing is a general trend of the talent at Rice is getting better and better. And that is what, when the administration said, okay, we're going to allow Blomgren to take this national recruiting model and put it into place here, that's what had to happen. You need to go sign top 100 players in the state of Florida, and you got to go sign the number one defensive back in the state of New York. And that's what has to happen. And that's what they did. So you can't help but be excited no matter what the piece of paper say. But the pieces of papers tend to agree with the thought that you look at this class and you say, I really like the quality of football players that they signed.
Right. And my last thing here is I think that it's really encouraging to see them really hit so well on this class because I may have mentioned something along these lines before, but it may seem hard to believe given that it doesn't seem like the Blomgren era has lasted very long. But this is now the third class this staff has signed because, you know, they had that transition class right after they were hired. We're now at the point with the early signing period where a new coaching staff, it's really till your third class that you are actually kind of able to bring your full recruiting resources to bear and to be able to recruit on kind of a normal calendar. Because that first class, you're scrambling to get anybody, really. Like, you've just been hired in at the earliest December and are scrambling to sign guys and then finishing out the class in February. And then for that first class, you spend all of January trying to round out the class, but everybody else has already moved on to the next one. So you're behind the gun for your second class as well, because the people that are also recruiting your guys for that second class have already gotten a start on them while you were trying to finish the first one. So only once you have signed that second class are you, you know, in the early signing period in December, and then you can devote most of your attention that January to your third class. That's the first time you're on an actual regular recruiting schedule, or what is sort of the new regular. So I think it's really encouraging that, you know, we got to this class, this first one on this regular schedule for them, and it was immediately and notably better than the previous two. I think that's a really good sign.
And the off-field staff is something that, you know, folks that sit outside of the football program, you know, sometimes it's easy to forget about. But Alex Brown was director of recruiting. He was brought in from across the street at the University of Houston and cherry-picked from that staff and brought over to Rice. And he came in during the spring last year, so March, April, that time period. And when Rice was working on this class, the 2020 class, they didn't start sending out offers till probably the beginning of the year, which, I mean, you're talking about by the time Rice was putting out offers, these Power Five schools had already done their carpet bomb offers literally a year ago, and players had already started picking up several offers that they were after. And so Rice was already kind of you know, under the gun when Alex came in here and kind of started rebuilding and putting that board together. So what I'm really excited to see is you actually saw more offers go out on National Signing Day for 2021 players for Rice than you saw Rice sign players on National Signing Day. And so Rice has already put out, I think my last count was 22 offers for the class of 2021. And we can save that for another podcast breaking down the future coming. But it like you said, if this year three is, you know, when you're finally caught up, I think at this point Rice is caught up and ahead and they're really trucking on the future, which means if this trajectory continues, they're looking at a 2021 class that should be, you know, even better and maybe include, you know, if you want to call Gabe Taylor a star or not, or a star in the making, it would be nice to be able to put a cherry on top of the 2021 class and say, oh, here's a guy that everyone wanted. And that's what you can do when you have this put in process. So the future is in good hands, and we've seen the trajectory that we need to see from the recruiting staff.
Right. All right. I think that wraps us up for recruiting. We're going to do a little look ahead to here to spring ball. I believe they start practice at the end of the month, like the 27th. Is that right?
Something like 24th, that. Monday, Wednesday, Friday. And then spring day, the spring game will actually be, I guess it wraps up April 3rd, I believe, is the spring game. So scattered throughout, but we'll have real football again. Well, kind of real football, practice football.
Real practice. Yeah, and then, I mean, obviously the biggest question for spring is, you know, who's going to be the backup kicker? I think that's the thing we're all going to be looking at. But
well, we've solved it. It's Antonio Montero.
Yeah. I wish I had a more interesting answer for what the actual, you know, biggest question for spring is. But it's really the quarterbacks. That's been Rice's major Achilles heel, you know, the first two seasons under this staff. And something that, you know, if they had had a quarterback to match their defensive effort last year, they could have had a really much better season than they did. So, you know, that's kind of what the focus has to be on this off season. That's it's often the biggest story for any team that doesn't have a settled quarterback. But I think for Rice in particular, with all they have coming back at most of the other positions on the field, it's the quarterback is just the biggest thing by far. And it's so nice that for the first time, like, you can pretty much guarantee that the guys who are going to play the bulk of, if not the whole season at quarterback, at starting quarterback, are all going to be on campus in the spring.
Yeah, no, you can guarantee Rice is not going to bring in another quarterback at all, period. The end. And I think that was probably, I think it was probably the most disappointing thing about the quarterback situation last year was you did have Tom Stewart arrive in the summer and you got through spring practice. And I'm like, I feel pretty confident in Wiley and he looked good. And then Tom got here and kind of the grumbling in, you know, August was Wiley's doing well, but we kind of think Tom would be the guy if he understood all of the playbook and the scheme and if he had been here in March. And sure enough, by the time that, you know, Tom got caught up to speed, he won the job. And we don't have to start that catch-up process in June this year. We have grad transfers who are already on campus, who were on campus in January. And they'll have time to study up on the playbook that will last for an 8-month incubation period with some practices instead of a, you know, 8-week period. That's what Rice needs to have is now there aren't any more excuses. You have them all on campus. You have four quality options, like guys that can get it done at the D1 level. We've seen at least the guys who have been here, Wiley and Giovanni, win football games.
Yeah, and also, just as importantly, you finally have a full roster of players on both sides of the ball who have been immersed in these systems for at least a year now. So you actually have you know, in spring 2018, nobody knew what they were doing at this. You know, this is the very kind of baby steps of building a program and installing a new system and turning over a roster. And then last year, they were still so much in the roster turnover phase that, you know, I think you've said that they, you know, barely had enough guys to practice at times last year.
Yeah, I would be at practice last year and they would call off practice an hour early. And you only get so much time to work with your football players on the field. But there were times last year where they had, I think, six healthy offensive linemen in the spring. And you're talking about a 2-hour practice. And that's a lot to go run a full. I mean, because even in a real game, like six offensive linemen, most schools are cycling through 7, 8, 9 guys. You might have 5 that play 80% of the snaps, but you're getting breathers. And Rice had to, I mean, like TCU, I think last year ended up canceling their spring game because they didn't have enough bodies. And I don't think that's something that, you know, maybe the conventional fan thinks about of like, okay, how many juniors and seniors left? How many people transferred out? Mm-hmm. What do you mean that we only have last year during the spring? There were times when there were 4 wide receivers that were healthy. Austin Trammell missed the majority of spring with, you know, a procedure and a couple things that were nicked up. And so Rice didn't have enough players to practice. And that is hard to get better when, I mean, Ari Broussard got brought over to running back because guys were nicked up and or not here yet. And Ari Broussard was probably, I think I might have labeled him the MVP of spring ball last year. Maybe. At running back, I think he had like something like 100 yards or 80 yards rushing and a touchdown in the spring game or something like that. He had an incredible spring, earned a scholarship, really cool moment. But finding out your walk-ons are good at playing running back is not what you want to be doing in the spring. You want to be finding out who of your already established players can take that next step. So I think Rice is at the point with the numbers on the roster where you have 2 teams deep of offensive linemen. Like you have 6 linebackers, you have a whole host of defensive backs, you can run a full scrimmage. And that's huge to evaluating where you're at.
Yeah. It's kind of crazy to think that, you know, entering the third season with this staff, that this is really the first time they're going to have like real actual spring practice with a full roster. But that's kind of where they're at. And it's exciting because they didn't have that last year. And, you know, as disappointing as the results were for the first 3 quarters of the season, we saw, you know, again and again, we've said, but especially on the defensive side of the ball, we saw how good the level of play was at times last year. And then it led to results in the last quarter of the season. So it's exciting that, you know, they played that well and they didn't even have the, you know, the ability to practice fully in the off season the way they do this year. And now they have that and you kind of get excited because, you know, what does that mean for the possibilities for this team, especially against an easier schedule this year? But it's also a little scary because, you know, like you said, there's no more excuses. Like, you know, we've repeatedly preached in the early period of having this staff, you know, just to have patience and to be ready. You know, everything's building towards kind of this season. Well, the future is here. Like the time is now. And it'll be interesting to see how this squad and this staff responds to kind of having pressure on them for the first time.
Yeah. And I mean, not to add pressure, but we now have what, 6 more months to talk about how they need to go out and win. Now this is now not a get better the season. This is a go bowling season. Yeah. So yeah, we have plenty of time to beat that drum. But with the walk-ons that they've brought in, Rice has brought in, I think, like 30, 35 players in their last 3 classes now. Mm-hmm. And so now they're going to have 100, probably close to, I have to do the math, probably close to 100 bodies, 80, 90 bodies on campus for spring. And 100 people on the roster come the fall. So that's a full football team. So, And yes, the opener against Houston cannot get here soon enough. And I know we're all looking forward to it. And but first, we will have plenty more to come from spring. One more signee, maybe, hopefully, to the 2020 squad. And then, you know, the last Play Wyatt, the safety Rice signed in this class, he committed to Rice on the last day of February last year. So it's mid-February now, so we could start seeing and probably will start seeing the 2021 class start up soon. So there is no offseason in football. Cruton never stops.
Well, all right. It's good to be back, y'all. We'll be talking to you again soon, and Rice fight.
This show was edited and produced by Carter Spires. It features music from Joseph McDade.